from the crypt.
And ghouls, welcome to episode 142 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason. Tonight I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
And Mondo.
Hello.
Hello. How are we all doing tonight?
I'm dad tired today.
Dad tired? I got a feeling.
I was talking before we started recording. I've fallen asleep in like multiple locations today, like in the passenger seat of the car, on the couch, that kind of thing. I remember my dad doing that. It was that whole, you know, like, I'm not sleeping. I'm just resting my eyes thing. Yeah, no, I've been like that all day long. So if I get quiet for a while, I'm just resting my eyes. That's cool. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I was also saying that I was at a family retreat up in Big Bear, and that's 6,700 foot elevation. And man, that you don't feel it immediately, but after a while, it comes on to you, especially like waking up. My head was very foggy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we had a good time. Excuse you, Mondo. Mondo, did you do anything fun this weekend?
I put clean my office, and the carpet powder I put down is bothering me. Tickling my throat.
That's what you get for cleaning.
Right. Don't fucking clean these boys. No, I did really nothing this weekend aside from go to the gym, and then today I have to get ready for my work trip tomorrow. So it's been played a bunch of Stardew Valley. It's been a good weekend.
You know, sometimes that's all the weekend you need, though, right?
Oh,
like, do nothing, lay around, have some downtime. Yeah, that's exactly.
100%, man. And there is nothing wrong with that. Like, I think if you guys are like me, I tend to mentally punish myself for taking a rest day. Like I kind of tell myself like, oh, you should be, you know, go pick up the backyard or doing X, Y, and Z. But you want to know what? It feels pretty good some days to lounge around and watch movies or play video games or just do something that's takes your mind off.
I mean, I will say lounging around and doing nothing comes kind of naturally to me. Like, it's not something I have to make myself do. But yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
Or you can balance and, you know, do a half hour of, you know, something productive and then, you know, take a rest, whatever floats your boat. Like, I have to be in the office tomorrow. I might just go in an hour late because I need a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
I got to be at the airport by probably 6:30. No, 7:30. I'm sorry. Get my time.
Your travel schedule always hurts me a little bit. All the early flights and everything just sound, you know, terrible.
You know, though, man, I rather fly early than have to, like, especially if I'm going to the East Coast. Because if I get a flight at a decent time, I'm not landing until 8 p.m. Eastern time. And then by the time I drive to site, it's 10, 11. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I rather suffer in the morning. I'll get there early and that'll be my hotel room by 4 o'clock. And but I'm just going to Washington. I'm going up to Seattle for work.
Yeah.
So that's
do you sleep on the plane? Or is it only in certain circumstances?
I tend to sleep, but not... I can't... Like, one of my coworkers, he'll put his head down and he'll sleep the whole flight.
Yeah.
I usually sleep like in 20, 30-minute bursts here and there.
Okay. I mean, Seattle's not far.
No, a 2.5-hour flight from here. It's not bad at all.
You can't hardly sleep on one that short.
No, then it's about a 2.5-hour drive to where I have to be, but...
Right. Where do you have to be? You say Tacoma?
Oh, no, Bellingham.
Bellingham. Okay, yeah. I know where that is.
Yeah. Beautiful area, though. So
We
do a lot of the Native American properties up in Washington. Mm-hmm. For anyone who hears the horror stories of Seattle, Seattle's a big city. Like, it's if you don't like big cities and don't like the problems they have, you're not going to like Seattle. The Museum of Pop Culture is phenomenal.
Yeah,
they have a whole underground room just with horror movie shit everywhere, and it's so cool. They have a fantasy land where you have to go through like a hobbit door to get into. It's really, really, the Museum of Pop Culture is so cool.
Is that the one with the sci-fi museum?
Yes.
A different one?
Yep.
Yeah, I've been to the sci-fi museum.
And they have, last time I was there, it's been a few years, they had a Pearl Jam exhibit for 10, I think. And they had a Jimi Hendrix exhibit, and they had like a Jimi Hendrix notebook that he hand wrote lyrics in. That's just insane to be standing there and like, holy crap, like this brilliant musician was writing his lyrics in this book.
Go ahead.
No, you.
Okay. I was going to say, it's always the little mundane, like history artifacts that I always find so interesting.
Yeah.
Like I remember going to the Smithsonian and seeing like Abraham Lincoln's glasses. Like it's not all the fancy stuff. It's just like, those are the glasses he wore in his face to see. That's cool that's right here.
I mentioned how I hate Philadelphia, but if you ever get a chance to go, if you go in the historic area where the Liberty Bell is and stuff like that, it's weird to stand in the courthouse where the Declaration of Independence was signed, and there's George Washington's chair they still fucking have there.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think, man, there was someone was sitting in this chair 300 and have almost 300 years, almost not quite 300 years, but close to 300 years, 250 years, I guess, was sitting in that chair and basically creating the country we live in now.
Yeah.
For better.
The historical artifacts I always find the most fascinating are the little like day-to-day stuff that normal people used.
But, you know, I've always said, man, there's something beautiful about when you buy a used record. And even if it's a little bit scratched up and have some pops and some clicks and it's a little bit weathered, it's kind of cool thinking about all the people that probably enjoyed this before I got my hands on it and got to enjoy it. And so many people got enjoyment out of X, Y, and Z. I just want to say, though, if you're not a fan of Seattle, that's fine. The areas around Seattle on the outskirts, Bellingham, Bow, Bice Snoqualmie, Suquamish, Anacortes, all those places are just gorgeous. Like it's such an awesome area.
A little drizzly, but yes, very nice.
I haven't made
it greater than Vegas, though.
I haven't made it to the Pacific Northwest at all yet, but it is very high on my list of places I want to visit at some point.
It's cool. It's very cool there. And it's a lot like California, where and Nevada too. I'm getting there. Where you have like the major cities that are very, very blue. And then you get outside those major cities and you get to kind of the outskirts of the state and it's very, very red.
Even Tennessee is like that too. The cities are blue in Tennessee. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I remember seeing the election that Nashville and maybe even Chattanooga both voted blue.
Oh yeah, Chattanooga, Nashville, Knoxville, Memphis. That's our holdouts here in Tennessee.
Well, I was just going to give a shout out to my alma mater, the University of Oregon in Eugene, which is like probably the bluest part in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I've flown into Eugene before to drive to Coos Bay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Coos Bay, beautiful little city. There's nothing there to do. There's the casino that we stayed at, and that was it. And I was talking to the bartender, and she was a super nice lady. And me and my coworker Ryan were there. And she's like, she was so like just excited to see people who weren't regulars.
Right.
And then she definitely gave us that pretty girl care because she gave us some drinks. I don't know. We sat there and drank for like 4 or 5 hours and my bill was like $9. I told you about, I'll grab this bill. You grab the next one. And the next night we came in to grab food and grab drinks and she was bartending and the bartender came and she goes, no, I got those guys. We're like, cool. And again, we walked out of there with dinner and drinks for like $20, I think. So nice. But we ordered old fashions and the first thing she does is drop a bunch of like mixed fruit in the cup and starts muddling it.
I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know what we're getting, but that's not an old fashioned, but it was still tasty. It was fun.
I was just thinking about old fashions the other day because it's one of those, if you order in a restaurant, you never exactly know what you get because I want sugar, I want whiskey, and I want bitters like that and some ice. That's all I want. I want it simple. But, you know, you can add cherries and orange peel and all kinds of other stuff.
Well, you should have a Luxardo cherry. A Luxardo is very important. It's like $25 for a tiny little jar. Worth it. But you should have one Luxardo cherry after you make the drink, though. That's like the accoutrement. It's the cherry on top of the sundae.
It is a cherry.
You know, a lot of restaurants, a lot of bars use sugar cubes for the sugar.
Uh-huh.
Because it's measured and it's easy and it's always the same. If you're making them at home, I highly recommend making Demerara, I'm probably going to butcher that, but it's basically raw sugar syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Simple syrup. It just tastes so much better. And I experiment with my bitters too and putting some grapefruit bitters in, maybe some walnut bitters. I'm experimenting now with monk fruit as simple syrup to make it be low carb.
Okay.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. Tonight we're talking the season finale of Creepshow season one, which came out on Halloween 2019. Jody, let's talk about the first episode.
It came out a lifetime ago at this point.
I know. 2019, jeez.
Before this.
Yeah. All right, so our first story is Skin Crawlers. And in Skin Crawlers, we meet our main character, an overweight man named Henry Quayle, who learns about a thing called Skin Deep by Sloan. It's a miraculous new treatment for weight loss created by Dr. Herbert Sloan. And we find out pretty quickly what it is. There are these newly discovered, highly advanced leeches that will attach to a person. They ingest some kind of saliva that liquefies all the fat, and they suck it out and eat the fat. And so it's one of those, like, somebody walks in and they walk out completely different than they were before they walk in, like an hour later. So he meets somebody who is getting ready to go through the procedure, and then he finds her again later and he sees the results. He's pretty hesitant at first because it's attaching these big, crazy, like, undiscovered leeches to people, and he's hesitant, but he gets persuaded by a woman, basically, who goes through it, and she says, you know, hey, we're going to do this thing on TV tomorrow. Why don't you become the live test subject? And on the show, we'll do the treatment right there. And so he shows up, and it's like a morning show, Good Morning America type thing, and they're getting ready to demonstrate the process. We also find out, though, that we're in the middle of a major once-in-a-century solar eclipse that is about to happen. That apparently is supposed to cover the entire United States. I guess the moon got bigger, because it doesn't normally cover that far, but hey, whatever. Only happens every 100 years, according
semantics.
To
that. Semantics, you already science.
Science.
Either way. while they're in the studio and the eclipse begins, all the people who have had this treatment start feeling a little funny. The weatherman starts, you know, having some stomach issues on the air. Dr. Sloan starts having some stomach stuff. The lady who had convinced Henry to be on the show starts having headaches, and then we see a little leechy thing pop out of her eyeball, and we start seeing all of the people start vomiting. The newsman's head explodes as the eclipse. Basically, they explain, you know, animals react strange ways to an eclipse, which is a true thing. But in this case, these leeches burst out of their host, because when the leech was sucking out the fat, he was let leeches be who they want to be, okay? But they were depositing eggs into the bodies.
That's a little advice for everybody. Let everybody be who they want to be.
Sure. It's okay. Don't bother these leeches. But they hadn't been counting on the solar eclipses. It drove all the animals crazy, including the leeches. They started bursting out of their hosts. And finally, Dr. Sloan collapses, and his body explode, like literally explosion, and these huge tentacles start coming out, and Henry manages to kill them by pushing a vending machine on top of it. And while everything is happening chaotically all around, Henry picks up a candy bar, the spell of the machine, and eats it as he walks away from all the chaos, because he never got the treatment, and everybody else who did exploded.
Mm-hmm. I would love it if, like, all the, like, the kind of, like, the husky guys just kind of walk around ruling the world after that. That's the thing I was rooting for. My people.
We all survived.
All right, Mondo, what do you think?
All right, so first thing, I have to get the negatives out of the way. And it's just very... just to start out with, this episode might have been my favorite segment of the entire season. I thought at the end, when it got just gooey and just gore flying everywhere... Mm-hmm. Earlier, so my two criticisms. One is the main character is eating a big hunk candy bar. That was my stepdad's favorite candy bar, and he sucks. That reminded me of him, so that kind of bummed me out. But I don't think they were worried about that when they made the episode, though, so it's fine. Or they maybe if I'd called them, they'd have canned it. But and then the CGI leech out of the eyeball, I thought was a little
hurtful. It was a little bit wonky.
But then when you watch towards the end and they bust out the practical effects for the tentacles coming out of the guy and the leech come out of the guy, I was like, yep, this is what you should have spent your money on, and you did. And it was well worth it. I also think it's kind of a social commentary, very much so, about how it, and at first I was kind of worried that this episode is going to go into fat phobic territory. But they never do. It's really trying to say how, as a society, we're so fixated on our external appearance or external looks or being in shape that people will do almost anything to achieve that. And as a guy going through, who went through diabetes and will still go through diabetes, but like, I get the mentality of, if you can, or if you can take something that's going to make you feel better or look better or be better, it's very easy to do that. And these companies prey on people that are just desperate for help. And, well, that's good.
Let's just be honest. If you were in that room when it was unveiled and they were offering it to you, how many of us would at least go, okay, I'm at least a maybe. Like, I'm not a no, but if you can take care of all this in like an afternoon and I don't have to worry about it anymore, I'm at least going to have to think about it, you know?
I mean, in my current state right now, I'd say I wouldn't do it. But when I was 300 pounds, yeah, on a heartbeat, I'd been like, yeah, dude, like, just hook that shit up to me and I'll take two. Like, how much does it cost? Yeah.
But there's also a lot of fallacies in how they were presenting it, because like, even if you just lost a ton of weight, you're not going to be muscular. You have a bunch of, like, right, you know, loose skin.
Well, everyone who did it did come out a little model-like afterwards.
I think that was one of the points, though, was trying to show that some, like, obviously the woman at the beginning, and I also really don't like when they put skinny people in the fat suits for movies.
Yeah.
But I do understand, because then they had to show her as a small person, so they it made sense to me at the end.
Right.
And she was the only person they did that with, it looked like. But I do feel like it was kind of, again, social commentary, how you saw the weatherman and anchors, and they're all dying from this, because even though they're not overweight, et cetera, or whatever, they still have that such societal pressure on themselves to be in the best shape that they're going to, you know, take this. And here in Vegas, at least, a lot of times when you see casinos and they hire, or nightclubs, and they hire for waiters and wait staff and bartenders, you know, they don't hire them as those titles. They hire them as basically entertainment workers.
Right.
Because then they can write into your contract that if you fluctuate, they'll weigh you and tell you if you gain more than 5 pounds, they can fire you. It's such a shitty thing we do. And that's why I thought it was a really nice touch at the end to have all these presumably fit and beautiful people dying from this, malady.
Right. And then they keep like talking about how much happier everyone is. And I'm like, losing that much weight or whatever cosmetically is not going to make you happy.
Right.
If anything, it's going to make you more insecure about keeping it.
One of the characters says something along the lines of like, I mean, I just go in there for a little while and then all my problems are fixed.
Yeah, like, no.
No, you will be smaller, but your problems won't all be fixed.
I was thinking of two different things in this. One is, the shittiest thing about losing weight is that you realize how different people treat you. And it kind of pisses you off, because it's like, I'm not a different person than I was when I was 300 pounds. I'm the same person. Why would you treat me different because I'm bigger? And I'll always be adamant that I will never, ever judge someone because of their weight, body. I don't like judging people, period. Unless you give me a reason to dislike me. Like, if you step on my toe or yell at my dog, like, then we might have beef. But other than that, I think that's kind of what they were. I think it's an illusion of happiness. And exactly. I think it was almost them projecting that. But I was also kind of thinking, I wonder if there is a side effect to this where they're also affecting the mind.
Could be.
Maybe, but they never go into that.
We'll hook a leech up to, you know, cure depression. Sign me up.
Yeah, no, that I'd be into. Yeah, it's interesting because this episode is dealing with a magic weight loss thing and an eclipse, which feels very much 2024 with Ozempic and all the eclipses we just had. This is 2 years after that other major eclipse was in 2017. I was getting a kick out of that. An interesting thing that I noted was this episode was written, one of the writers on this episode is a guy named Paul Dini, who wrote like Batman animated series and a lot of those 90s cartoons. He's the guy who created Harley Quinn.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I'm kind of like, okay, he got to let loose a little bit on this one. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. It was just, you know where it's going, but you just want to see the how or like the effects of it. You know something really bad is going to happen.
And the moment they unveil those things, like, you know, something's going to go wrong with that.
And then they talk about the eclipse, and you know the eclipse is going to, you know, affect it somehow. But man, they really went for it. And I really loved it.
And the way, too, they handled the main character, how he's the only person in that study group that's very apprehensive. And then, I don't know, we touched on this, and then talking about, then if you notice the way that the girl, the main other who gets the treatment, the way she talks to him when they meet is really fucking sad. Because she's so demeaning to him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And instantly. And it pisses me off because, like, I'm like, I've known some people in the past who they're never going to listen to this. They're people aren't in my lives anymore, but they've went through gastric bypass and went through surgeries, never really changed their lifestyle at all. Just they couldn't eat as much because it made them vomit. But then they would start talking down to people that were bigger. It's like, dude, like all you just had a doctor tell you need to lose weight and they cut and your insurance was lucky enough to cover it. Like you didn't work hard at that. You didn't do anything at that. Like don't act like you're better than everybody else because you got a surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so act like that anyways, but
yeah, it was so weird how they're like handing them donuts as they walk in.
Yeah. Well, that's it's part of their whole thing of like, you never have to worry about anything ever again. This will take care of it all. You can eat like crazy and then just come back and get another treatment and you'll be fine, I guess, is kind of what they're going for. Like, don't change your life. Just keep on coming to us and we'll keep on applying the leeches.
And it's also kind of with the Ozempic trend and the semaglutide trend you see today where they put me on one of those when I first got diagnosed as diabetic and I've never felt worse in my life. I mean, you saw me shortly thereafter when we were at Chattanooga Film Festival, and I was probably only about 60-70% because that shot made me feel so terrible all the time because it slows your digestion down to the point where you can't eat because your body's still trying to digest a meal you ate yesterday. And but what's crazy about Ozempic is when you look at there are people out there who genuinely need these things that will definitely improve their quality of life and really help them. But if you look at the majority of people that are taking it, a lot of it's celebrities and people who are in that boat. And I'm not knocking them as people for wanting to take it. I'm more so knocking our society for putting that pressure on people to look a certain way.
Yeah. And well, more perpetuating the myth that, you know, once you drop that weight, you're just going to be happy or successful or whatever.
That'll fix everything in your
life.
I
think you should be healthy, but I don't think it's going to make you suddenly a happier person.
No, not at all.
Okay, so this is directed by Roxanne Benjamin. She did a segment for Southbound and XX. She did the Something Wrong with the Children last year. She was a producer on the original VHS, and she just does such a great job with this, balancing the effects and some really subtle comedy I really liked. The main guy, Henry, is played by Dana Gould. He was also in Tales from the Halloween, also in Southbound, also in Stand Against the Evil. But he also has a really long voiceover career. He's been a Simpsons and Family Guy, a bunch of stuff like that.
He played it really well. He's mentioned humor. I totally forgot. He saves the day with a candy vending machine.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. Once I saw that, I'm like, oh, he's going to splat that thing. And yes, he did.
And man, we talked about the effects a little bit, but when the thing blows up and all the gore is coming out in the air and it's chunky, that was fucking gross. And I loved it.
Yeah.
Well, I think my kids must think I'm insane when we watch something like this together, because like the extreme over the top gore where people are getting splattered by exploding things, I cackle like a madman when these things are happening. And I'm like, this is objectively gross stuff, but it's, you know, it's my humor right there.
Yeah. I had it paused right when like the one was like holding her hand over her eye. You can see blood coming out. My wife walked in the room and was like, what the hell are you watching? I'm like, oh, it's nothing. No, I thought it was a really fun over the top segment. Sometimes that's what we want. Let's compare it to the next segment, Jordy.
All right. Our next segment is called By the Silver Water of Lake Champlain. And we're set in 1984, where a teenager named Rose has recently lost her father. I don't know how recently, but within a few years, who died while attempting to hunt down Champ, the monster that allegedly lives in Lake Champlain, which is a real cryptid thing, like Lake Champlain. In like New York and Vermont, Quebec, that area, They supposedly have a large, Loch Ness monster kind of monster living out there. And so this is about that. So Rose is now trying to find Champ herself and prove that her late father's claims of having seen the creature were not delusions, because the whole town thought he went crazy, because he went out and he got, like, supposedly dragged away by something, and he came up washed up on the shore unconscious. He said, "Champy's real. I have to find it." Went after Champy. And then next time he washed up on the shore, he was dead. And so everyone in town thought he was crazy. Okay, so also she has a little brother and I don't know if he's her boyfriend, but they're definitely on their way towards that, named Thomas. On the other side, though, she has a stepfather named Chet, who is a complete piece of crap. Just one of those guys who's mean for the sake of being mean. Like he goes out and torments her boyfriend by, like, threatening violence against him, holds a knife out like that. He's just one of those guys.
He's very seductive with that knife. It's kind of awkward, a very, very awkward segment. Yeah. And they talk about how he fought in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those people that is using his past trauma as an excuse to act like shit now.
Well, and I think he's one of those people who went to Vietnam because he wanted to murder people. Like, he's just...
I wouldn't doubt that. Right. But a lot of people came back from there, even whether they wanted to be there or not. A lot of people came back with a lot of trauma, but like anything in life, the only way to get rid of trauma is to go through therapy and try to make yourself a better person, not to use that as your crutch as to why...
I don't know if I was the only one who was picking up on this, but the teenage daughter's what, like early teens, like maybe 15, 16, something like that. Yeah. She's pretty young. Chet kind of had this, like, no guy is going to come around because she's mine kind of creepiness to him. Like,
yeah,
it was something uncomfortable. It's a bad relationship. He's a bad dude.
I think that might just be the era and how a lot of, it's the old thing where it's like, oh, if a guy comes to pick up my daughter, I'm going to have a shotgun ready. It's like, I dare you to pull a shotgun on my kid.
Yeah.
We'll have a conversation.
I just don't feel like he cared about her enough to threaten a boyfriend because he was trying to protect her. I feel like there had to be some other motivation.
I didn't
just being a piece of shit.
Yeah, I didn't see anything dirty. I thought more was of a dominance thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like he wants to control everybody's lives, and he's going to do that through any means necessary.
Yeah. One more thing about the Vietnam part is that this was directed by Tom Savini, who was a Vietnam veteran. He did war photography.
Yeah.
So it's there's probably something like I wonder if he's basing this on someone he knew or
could be.
There's a little something, an extra layer there.
I haven't read the novella or the short story was done by Joe Hill.
Right.
So I haven't read it yet, but I'm wondering now. This made me interested in reading the source material.
I think it's in one of his collections, something Ghost. I don't remember the name of it, but I found it
earlier and put it on my Kindle for my trip. So I'll probably read it this week.
Anyway, so that's our setup here. And then one day, Rose finds what they think is Champ's corpse washed up on the shore of the lake. And that means her father was right all along. She's with the boyfriend. Little brother shows up. So she says to the little brother, "Hey, go back and tell mom. I want her to see this and prove that dad wasn't crazy." Because that's another thing, is the mom doesn't believe him either. She thinks he went crazy and died. And so little brother goes back, boyfriend is still there, and then Chet shows up. And Chet immediately is like, "I'm going to be rich from this. This is mine. I'm going to take it. I'm going to sell it. I want to make all the money." And Rose wants her dad to get the credit. To the point that the boyfriend, like, carves the dad's name on the side of the dead animal, which is creepy, by the way. But
yeah, a little weird.
I don't think he carved his name. He carved
the father's name.
And Rose.
Okay, that's what threw me off. I thought he was doing like the carving the heart into the tree.
Yeah,
I was like, his name's Thomas. Is that his real name? Okay, that threw me off.
Don't carve hearts into dead animals for a girl. It's not impressive to them.
Well, I didn't pick up that this was in 1984 at first. And I couldn't figure out why this guy was dressed up like Rambo. And there was like a reference to Rambo. Like, once I figured that out, I'm like, oh, okay, he's just, the movie is out. It's popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, okay. No one. It was like that. Everyone had that kid in high school that dressed a little bit too much like the Crow.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it reminded me of. Like, he was definitely, yeah. People were definitely looking at him at school. Like, if that kid dressed like that nowadays and went to school, like, you'd be like, that guy's going to shoot the fucking school up. Please call him the FBI right now.
All right. So, Chet is trying to claim this as his own. And, then, he holds, or he gets in a fight with the boyfriend and eventually ends up like holding him at knife point. But that's when we realize that this was not Champ. This was Champ's baby, because mom is here and she is pissed. And so she takes Chet and just comes up and bite lawyer in the bathroom in Jurassic Park style. Yes. Like, just takes him, you know, head down, takes his entire body, blood drops everywhere. And about that time, after killing Chet, Champ then grabs the baby's tail and slowly drags it into the water. You know, it's making like mournful sounds and mourning the loss of this baby. At that point, though, the mother arrives and there's nothing there. There's no more evidence, except for she sees a shadow of Champ disappearing into the fog. And she realizes that her husband had been right all along. And so the family happily leaves, you know, kind of happy ending, despite the fact that they've already said, like, we need Chet to keep us afloat. And, you know, if we don't have Chet around, we're all going to, you know, not have enough money. We're going to starve and die. But they're happy that Chet's dead. And so they all go home, and Chet's leg with his special shit kicker boots washes up onto the shore.
Now, one question I had is that she had a Polaroid camera. She took pictures. Mm-hmm. Didn't they have those? Did she still have those pictures?
Well, I think Chet took them at one point.
Well, no, and that's where I was kind of thrown off too, because she puts one in her back pocket and puts another inside of that folio that she had. And Chet took the folio and definitely crumpled the picture up that was inside of there. But I thought she still had one in her back pocket.
Right, because they're trying to convince the mom of it. I'm like, show her the picture.
Right. Well, during the convincing part, I'm like, so there's no evidence of the dinosaur, but Chet just got freaking squished like an orange, and all of his guts should be in a pile right outside the water. Like, you should be able to see some evidence of what's happened.
Well,
but that way, I guess they washed away.
It perturbed me that here you have your daughter, your son, and the daughter's boyfriend, who are all like, look, we all saw this thing, and you're still saying they're wrong. That's kind of
right.
That's kind of shit. Well,
they didn't like stop and explain, like, no, there was a baby. It was on the beach. Then the mother took it. Like, at least like, oh, it was here. Now it's not. Like, at least explain it in a plausible manner. But I understand they're excited. Yada yada. All right, Jody Lewis.
Yeah, I like this story overall. There are some places I feel like the narrative could have been tightened up a little bit, like the things we're talking about right now, that, you know, just something as simple as, instead of being like, but it was here, you have to believe me, they could have said, yeah, there was a baby and the mom came and took it. Like, you could have just said that. Like, it was, say more, talk more. You don't have to like convince people. But overall, like, I really did enjoy this one. I like the finding the baby version out there, and I thought that was really cool looking. You know, it's one of those things, I think, as a kid, especially if you live somewhere where there's supposed to be some kind of cryptid, to suddenly have this like evidence of this thing, especially, you know, the whole thing with the dad. And, you know, I really enjoyed the story of it. I liked Nessie, or Champ, finally coming back and eating Chet, because Chet's one of these characters, you know, from the very beginning, from his introduction, he's going to have to die, and it's a good way to go, as far as, on a show. But yeah, no, I really did enjoy this one. It's not perfect. I feel like maybe if they had just a few more minutes, I think it would have been, you know, they could flesh things out just a touch. But overall, I think it's a really good story. It's probably that Joe Hill story is the backbone of the whole thing.
Right.
But you also get some cool monster stuff, and I think the acting's good too. The kids all did a good job. So yeah, overall, a good one.
Armando,
this was probably my least favorite that we watched so far, and I didn't hate it, not by any means, or even disliked it. Like, my rating is still a good rating for this. But I do feel like they took Joe Hill's short story and tried to cram so much of it in 20 minutes, where they really needed to kind of figure out what to focus on.
Sure.
And I think part of that, the narrative you brought up, is that they try to just fits so much into that 22 minutes or 23 minutes or whatever, that a lot of stuff, it feels like it's either rushed. For instance, when they send the brother to go back to fetch the mom, Chet just somehow knows where they're at and finds them right away. I'm like, it shouldn't be that easy to find this mythological creature. So that kind of bummed me out. I will say, if you're going to, they're lucky as shit that Champ can't read. Because if Champ could read and see someone's name carved into the side of their baby, it might have gone on a little rampage and fucked some people up.
Yeah, they really could have used a moment where the mother kind of threatens them or something like that. And they do, like, there's some gesture or something they make to, like, placate the mother. Like, I feel like, yeah, there was, like, a little bit of a missed opportunity there for a little bit of tension.
I think the way I kind of felt at the end, and I really enjoyed the creature effects. Mm-hmm. Anytime you give me a kind of a goofy kaiju, I'm in. Like, I'm totally into it. And I kind of thought the ending was more about she kills Chet because Chet looks like the aggressor, right? He looks like someone who's trying to cause harm. He's standing with a weapon, so she kills him. And then the trauma of seeing her dead baby kind of takes over her. It's kind of saying that animals ain't that much different than we are. And it was, I'm not gonna lie, I got a little sad. When she pulled the baby back into the water, I was like, oh, man. Because as parents, like, if there's one feeling I hope I never have the day I die, it's having to bury a child, right? Like,
yeah.
So I think they're trying to really kind of push that that trauma or the love that Champ had for its child.
Yeah, I like this one. It's almost a little E.T.-ish ways. It's very kind of 80s Amblin. I think I would have liked this more if it was the first episode, because I think we're on such a high from the zaniness of that one, and to go to something more thoughtful and introspective, it was just such a tonal shift. And seeing Tom Savini's name on it, I'm like, okay, we're in for some shit. Because when you think of Tom Savini, you think of these over the top, amazing gore effects. And I'm not saying he has to do that every time, but I think after seeing the first episode and all the great effects in there, I was kind of primed to associate that with Tom Savini and, like, was expecting something a little more intense as far as the gore goes. And that's the episode should be taken on its own merits to some degree, but they did make a conscious effort to pair it with another one. So that just, you know, as far as how I experienced it, if I watch it again, then maybe having things a little reset, I might think of it differently, but I think they should have flipped these around.
I sometimes wonder if Savini, and I mean, he directed the Night of the Living Dead remake, which is definitely obviously a very, very powerful piece on social commentary. So very, very, a lot of social commentary, obviously, in Night of the Living Dead. But I wonder sometimes that when people who are so known for their gore effects and all the splatter effects and being Love Machine in From Dusk Till Dawn, if when they actually get their chance to get behind the camera or be the director, that they want to kind of do stuff that's a little bit outside of their wheelhouse.
That makes sense.
I'm not knocking him for wanting to do that. That's fine.
I think Creepshow is a little bit like Tales from the Crypt, that, you know, directors get a chance to play a little bit.
I think Jason threatened me. He just made a fist motion like he was gonna.
He did.
I will say though, yeah, the monster effects—they really spent their money on this episode overall. Between the great monster prop, the atmosphere was really good in this one. The fog looked really cool, and yeah, I like the acting quite a bit from pretty much everyone here all around. There wasn't like any major standout actors as far as their careers, but I think they all did a good job.
I think all three of the kids weren't the best, but they weren't bad. They were just young actors, and that's sometimes what you get. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah, the boyfriend was kind of amped, but I like the little kid. He was pretty cute.
I think you really hit it when you said something about this being, you know, reminded you of like an Amblin type thing, because it's got that mix, and it reminds me of being a kid that was into cryptids. Like, before I got into horror, I loved Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and Mothman. That was my first introduction into kind of, you know, spooky stuff. And I read about Champ back in the day. But the thing about cryptids and the reason why people are so into them is it's kind of a mix of that. There's some fear and mystery, but also this awe and wonder. And I feel like they really hit that in this, that like finding this was an amazing, incredible, freaky, you know, scary thing. Someone died right in front of them, but it's that mix of all of those big, like, wander in the world kind of things. You know, a good monster movie. I remember reading somebody who said something like, when I see a movie about people killing people, it always makes me feel like, you know, sad and empty inside. Because that's what people do. People do kill people. But when I see a monster movie, it makes me feel like the world is a vast and mysterious place and fills me with wonder. And, you know, and I think this story definitely hits some of that.
Every night again, Jody, you talk about something from your childhood. I'm like, this is why we're on the same wavelength. Because because we both read those orange horror movies when we were kids. Yep. And that's exactly what when I was a kid, I wasn't reading about whatever space. I was reading about cryptids. I was really into cryptozoology when I was younger.
I remember sending off stuff to SETI, you know, the people who did like the alien research, and like I would send off where they would send me, because it was just the urge towards spooky stuff was there in me, but it took a while for it to bloom.
You know, as a lover of pro wrestling too, from a very young age, like I think I just kind of really enjoy the world of suspending my disbelief and believing in something that wasn't real, which is kind of cool. Chupacabra, that fucker exists. I swear by that one.
One other quick note about this episode: we get a nice little Adrian Barbeau cameo as the radio DJ at the beginning.
Oh yes, yeah, which is perfect with the fog coming in.
Yeah, always like that.
My wife is not a fan of the fog. Like,
oh, really?
She said it's boring. Yeah, and I'm like, and then when she said that, I kind of watch it. I'm like, yeah, it is a little bit, but it's still atmospheric and fucking awesome.
Yes. Right. It's more atmosphere. It's more a mood movie than it is like, you know, excitement.
Yeah.
Explosion, things happening.
I feel like it's a movie you have to be in the right place for. Like if you're sleepy, the fog's just going to be boring not going to make it through it. But if you're like tuned into its wavelength, it's a nice creepy ghost story.
I'm on with you.
And seeing, was it Tom Atkins and Jamie Lee Curtis?
Uh-huh.
That scene always cracks me up. All right, let's go to our episode rating. We do 0 to 5, 5 being the best, 0 being the worst. Jody, what do you give each of these episodes?
Oh, each of them. Okay, so on their own, I'm going to give the first one 4, I think. Maybe 4.5. I can't quite decide. If I have to, I'll go with Mondo. If I have to ask myself, I will give it a 4.5. second one. Many, many things I liked about it, but there were still just some places. Again, 5 more minutes would have been enough, I think, to flesh some of it out. I'm going to go 3.5 for that one.
All right, Mondo.
We're not going to be hive mind tonight. The first segment, I'm going to 5. To me, it was just what I wanted. It was splattery. Danny Gould was a fun character and someone you could really root for. And I loved everything about that episode. And then you give me those practical effects with fucking Lovecraftian tentacles at the end and the chunks of gore. I'm like, you have me. Hook, line, and sinker. You got me. And the second one, again, probably my least favorite of the entire first season. And like Jody said, I think 5 more minutes and being able to let some of the stuff breathe or flesh out, because it also seemed in that episode you're getting so much exposition that it was hard to like even react to what you just heard. So I'm only going to give that one a 3, which by no means is that a bad score at all. It's still a decent thing. I think it's worth watching.
Here's the thing. If you do a 5 and a 3 and I do a 4.5 and a 3.5, we're still averaging out at a 4. Like we're still
right.
I'm in sync with Mondo on this one. I should have really written it down first, but yeah, I was gonna give the first one a 5. It's just joy. It's what I want. It's amazing. The other one, I think maybe if I watched it separately, if I watched it again, I think I might like it more, but yeah, I'm going with, I think, a 3. It's not bad, but there's just a lot. I feel like a lot of potential was left on the table.
I feel like we're talking about Stephen King stuff in general, the way that we're talking about a lot of this though, like Joe Hill, Stephen King, they both write dense books full of lots of characters and, you know, motivations and all this. And you can't fit that into a show. You just can't. You can't fit it into a 6-hour miniseries and do it justice. Like
you can to an extent, but it's very difficult.
To an extent, reason why I've never seen
a named Mike Flanagan movie
that I've said as good as the book.
You have to be Mike Flanagan or Frank Darabont. And there's there's a reason why those are the only two that have really, and I love Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, I've never read The Shining, but I know it's nothing like the book. So I'm just qualifying that one for the converse from the conversation. But Darabont has had a really, really good knack for picking out like what pieces need to fit into this movie and how to get to them in the proper way. The one thing I'll say about Joe Hill versus his dad, I love Stephen King. I love Stephen King. My one complaint about Stephen King is he never seems to know how to end his book. He's the brilliant artist or like a musician. When you play music, at some point you have to decide the song is done. And I think it's really hard from it. It's really hard to do that playing music. I think he has trouble doing that. Joe Hill has had some fantastic endings to his books. I've only read Heart-Shaped Box and Nosferatu, both highly recommended.
Yeah, I've read Nosferatu. It's very good.
Yeah, Nosferatu is great. Did you watch the miniseries?
I watched a little bit to get the idea.
It was very good, actually.
There's some things I like, some things that really bugged me in it. There's just so much surrealism in the book that like seeing it on paper on like a visual, I want it in my head.
Yeah,
Christmas Land is hard to actually portray.
Yes, very much.
I was like, I don't want to see someone try to make that because I don't think it'll match the grandeur of what's in my mind.
I think that's anytime. I remember Jody got me to read The Deep.
Yeah,
and that's one of the books I was reading at night. Like, I shouldn't read this before I go to bed. It's a great book, but I heard they're making a movie of it. And
that's going to be hard to capture that
option. Yeah. And that's one of the other things where it's like the book is so surreal and you never kind of know if what you're seeing is real or fake. If they put that into a movie, it's going to be very difficult to pull that off. I think that if you never read the book, you could probably watch it. Like The Ruins was another good one. I read the book recently. And then watched the movie afterwards. And I was like, man, there's so much subtlety and better stuff they did in the book. But if I watched that movie on its own before I read the book, I'd have enjoyed it a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, that book is huge, too.
The Ruins?
It's very long. The Ruins, yeah.
I think it's only like 300 pages.
Really? Because someone left a copy of The Ruins like in my work lunchroom. I was kind of reading through it a bit. Maybe it was a different book,
what it could have been is that I used to work at a bookstore. Every now and again, we get the I forgot what they called them. They're the books that had the large fonts in them for people that enjoy reading small fonts. And it was funny because you'd see a book that was like 200 pages, and it'd be like 450 pages in the small font.
All right, let's move on to our song of the day, Mondo.
Alrighty, so nothing really attached to this episode, but one of my favorite bands in the world. You can see the skateboard I have over there of them. You can't see. Yeah, there's Dark Throne just came out with their new record entitled It Beckons Us All. Dark Throne is one of my favorite bands in history. I know I've done a song or two for them before on the podcast. I don't care. We're 140 episodes in. I'm going to have some repeats. I like to promote bands when new albums come out. And what's cool about Dark Throne is they started their career off the first record, Soul Side Journey, straight technical death metal. And then they got in the Norwegian, they're from Norway, and they got in this Norwegian, they realized they wanted to do black metal. And they came out Transylvanian Hunger, Under a Funeral Moon, and Blaze in the Northern Sky, which is like a trifecta that kind of burst open the doors of Norway. And then they followed up with an album called Panzerfaust, which was like mid-tempo and kind of slow and a lot of Celtic Frost influence, and people fucking hated it. And I love that album. And now it's finally getting the love it deserves. But then they kind of became, I mean, this in the best way possible, they kind of became a cover band, wherein they just kind of played what they were kind of listening to and what they were loving. And enough to where, I think it was Old Star sounded like, kind of like Black Sabbath doing black metal. And then they did like Circle the Wagons and Fuck Off and Die, which were straight like crust punk meets black metal. They still have their own flavor. You can still tell it's Dark Throne, but it's really fun to listen to their career trajectory. And with this newest record, it's definitely a mix of black metal and heavy metal and doom metal and all these fun little things. And the song I am picking off that is called, I just because I love the name. It's the last track on the album. Actually, you know, I'm not going to do that one because if I ever update our playlist, it's 10 minutes long. I don't like 10 minute songs on our playlist. So I'm going to go with, Black Dawn affiliation, which I think is a cool song title and a cool song off that album. And it's available everywhere that you buy your records at. It's available on iTunes Music, Spotify, wherever you guys want to listen to it at. And if you didn't just hit the fast forward button during the segment, I appreciate it. I imagine we have some people that are like really into this segment, and like the majority of people are like, no, fuck this.
That's why like, I always think
I'm going to go like something outside the realm of metal, but that's like, I hate to say, that's like 95% of what I listen to. And I truly love the genre. Speaking of which, at the end of May, I officially got my hotel booked, got flights booked, got my tickets. I will be at Maryland Death Fest in Baltimore. So I know we have at least one fan that'll be there, and I'm going to try to hook up with him. But if anybody's out there from Maryland Death Fest, I'm not going to carry stickers with me. But come say hi if you see me. It'd be kind of cool to meet. I'm just not going to carry stickers to a metal fest. You know, maybe I will. I don't know. Jason, send me stickers.
All right. Oh, speaking of which, I'm going to be at Monsterpalooza on Saturday. That's the big Southern California convention in Pasadena. So hit me up if you see me, and I'll give you a sticker. And maybe I'll let you stroke my beard. It depends. Maybe.
Wait, what's the criteria for stroking your beard?
We'll see. It's more in the moment decision.
Do you remember that song?
You just have to, show your Patreon receipt. Like, you know, show your email, like, hey, I subscribe. Okay. You get to stroke the beard.
That's the $50 tier.
Oh,
the beard stroking.
The $500 tier, you can pay him. Like, it's fine.
Speak for yourself. All right, Jody.
Don't knock anything that you try to. Like, we're just around this fucking... We just have one life on this fucking planet, dude. You might as well see what you can do with it.
All right, Jody, give me some horror news for the love of God.
Jason already threatened to fist me tonight, so we're just going.
I knew that was going to come back eventually. All right, let's talk releases fist. First. All right, we have...
Fist of Fury.
The Amazon Prime Video show Them just came out with a new season. I haven't actually watched the first season yet. I've heard good things about it. It's African-American family, and it's very centered around racism and things like that at the time. This season is called The Scare. It is set in Los Angeles, and I think there's a serial killer out there. So, yeah, I've heard good and bad things about that first season, so I'm interested in checking both of them out.
I saw the trailer before Abigail, I think, and I was into it. I'm like, this looks kind of cool, kind of interesting.
We've also got the first movie from Caitlin Cronenberg, daughter of David Cronenberg, Humane, came to theaters on April 26th. And Mondo's favorite release of the week, Infested.
Dude, I'm gonna watch this shit. I've decided I'm gonna fucking watch it. Yeah. I read in the new Fangoria, I think it's like 70% of the spiders are real.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it reminds that remember that VHS segment they did where they locked the girl in the coffin and then the spiders started busting through? You know those are fucking real spiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh god.
I just can't. I could never fucking do it. But I think I'm going to try to watch this movie.
Okay.
Have nightmares the next 3 to 4 years.
I heard about this recently on the Colors of the Dark podcast. They were talking about it. And she said the difference between this and like your typical spider movie, something like Arachnophobia, Eight-Legged Freak, something like that, is they always play those for comedy, right? Like there's horror, but there's comedy. They play it straight. Like in Infested, it is a giant spider invasion, but it is played straight, not comedy. It's French. You know, you have to read subtitles. So it's a serious spider movie. I'm kind of excited to check it out personally.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. But we forgot to mention the opening for this Creepshow had a little bit of a spider, a little larva, a maggot action.
Yeah, so
looked a little from beyond, like kind of that last scene where they're kind of in the fog and everything. Was that just me?
I don't know where you're coming from with it.
Wait, what, the movie The Beyond or From Beyond?
I get them confused.
The Beyond, I think it's what I'm trying to think
of. They're both good movies. One, though, is a masterpiece. One is great.
Well, there's a spider scene in one of them, and then they end up like in a weird like fog zone in it as well. So
that's The Beyond, where they have the obviously very fake tarantulas tearing apart the guy's face, which I absolutely fucking love. I just got a new shirt, and it says directed by Lucio Fulci. From the good friends at Grindhouse Releasing. And part of me secretly hopes now that I lose an eye and can wear an eye patch because someone would get the joke. I mean, I guess I don't have to lose an eye. I just wear an eye patch. Just wear an
eye patch. If you go to like a horror convention to wear an eye patch with that, you'll get marks.
Okay. I guess that works out. But I didn't quite get the Beyond, any Beyond reference in there, but I respect that. Right. I've been playing the fuck out of Stardew Valley again. Because it came with the 1.6 update, and that's my cup of food. And now you can go to the dangerous dungeons, and so I'm going with the because you have to get to level 100 to get the achievement. So I'm going down there, going down the dungeons, and suddenly you get to a certain group of levels, and there's spiders everywhere, and I'm like, this is fucking stupid. I will kill all these fucking spiders. Like, why does it have to be spiders?
All right, other releases. Just released on this previous Friday. What was that date? The 26th. Bill Skarsgård's movie, Boy Kills World. The big action, over-the-top, bloody, violent thriller with Sam Raimi as a producer. You know, it looks cool. It looks like a cool movie.
As hell.
It's got H. John Benjamin doing like this narration because the guy is unable to speak. And so his inner voice is H. John Benjamin, the voice of Bob Belcher and Archer.
And Coach McGurk off of
and Coach McGurk. Movies. Yeah, H. John Benjamin only has one voice. He does not do other voices. But, well, no, actually on Bob, he does other voices. But his main voice is just his voice. And I always love hearing him at anything.
His book is really good. It's definitely worth his biography is really good. It's definitely worth checking out. He also was the voice of Arby's for a while. Arby's had their meat hotline where it asked you for options and it would tell you what you should eat, and it was H. John Benjamin.
Nice. That's awesome.
Speaking of which, Bob Burgers, like everyone should be watching that show. Like, fuck, it's such a good show.
It's one of the best.
I'm going through a rewatch of it, and I just watched a Beef Squatch episode, and I was like almost crying with tears. But not only that, though, and I will say this, they did an episode, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was about regular size Rudy.
The Amazing Rudy.
And it was legit. Man, I was sobbing at the end of that episode. And I called it one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen for any medium. Like, it's so fucking good. So
it's about a kid, like, you know, dealing with the divorce of his parents and, you know, trying to find love in a happy family. Like, it's so good for her, trauma, man.
And it cuts really deep. Like, that's such, it's so well done. And it's never played for laughs.
Mm-hmm. But the episode's not like so heavy that like you can't enjoy it. It's a fun episode because it's Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, there's still funny stuff in there, don't get me wrong.
All right, other things that have come out or are coming out. Now available for digital purchase and rental, we have Love Lives Bleeding, the action movie with Kristen Stewart and the muscly lady. I don't know what else I don't know what her name is, but she's got muscles. Yeah.
Yeah, I really been wanting to see that, so I'm glad
I'm very excited to watch this.
It's very good. And I want to discuss it when you guys watch it because it takes some weird turns. But I was into it the whole time. Like, I was into it the whole time. It's great. And I might have a thing for muscles now. I don't know. Like, I didn't think I did, but now I'm like, maybe.
I get it. All right. Other releases, we have a trailer that just came out for Mind, Body, Spirit, which is one that Mondo and I both saw at CFF last year. It's the like yoga influencer person movie.
I really enjoyed that and the way it was shot and the way they that's a cool story. And some of the camera shots they do are just brilliant. And, you know, it's funny, Jody, is just yesterday I was thinking about that movie and I could not remember the name of it. I meant to message you about it, but then.
Yeah. Mind, Body, Spirit, digital outlets on May 7th. So you don't have to wait too long to watch it again, which I definitely will watch it again as soon as it's out.
Also May 7th, my favorite film from CFF. The last movie ever made.
Oh, yeah.
On demand.
Oh, nice, nice. I missed that one during CFF, so I'm excited to watch it.
I'm really loving the whole like influencer horror subgenre that's come up the last couple of years. Yeah. It's just a little fresh, you know, but you know, fresh takes on, you know, a lot of old tropes, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, My Body Spirit definitely has a lot of that in there. Is she's trying to establish a channel, but also being slowly driven insane / corrupted by this evil in her house while she's making a channel. It's great. It's great stuff.
Very well done. And
It sounds like my life, except for instead of evil, it's children.
Yeah.
Well, they could go hand in hand.
Sometimes.
I do think what's kind of cool is in 15, 20 years, we'll look back on this era of horrors, and it's just kind of cool when that it captures what we're dealing with right now. We're
seeing right now. Moment in time. Yeah. It's like going back. I just recently watched Sick for the first time. That's set during the pandemic.
I still need to watch that.
It's good. Yeah, I liked it.
I actually liked it quite a bit.
It's not as COVID heavy as you would think.
No. It's set in that world. And most of the time people have unmasked. It does eventually, you know.
It references. Yeah. It's a part of the plot, but it's not like people are getting sick and getting others sick.
Right. It's about COVID, but it's not about COVID. That's just the setting for all the
chaos. It's a slasher set during COVID.
I will say though, I don't think I'll ever watch Host again.
Oh, yeah. I rewatched Host not long ago. It still holds up.
It's so great, but I don't want to relive that Zoom era. And even so, I think Jody, you're also a purveyor of Dropout TV.
Yes, very much.
I love Game Changer Show. I love Make Some Noise, but I will not watch the seasons that were Zoom.
Yeah, I watched that season one time, but it's not going to be what I go back to. I go back to other seasons where they're not on Zoom. I get it. All right, last piece of horror news. So the director of Infested, Sebastian Venicek?
Terrible human.
I don't know. Because he's making a movie. Okay.
Spiders. That's it.
maybe this will help redeem him. He is directing the next installment in the Evil Dead franchise.
Ooh.
We don't know anything else about it, but we do know he is directing it. But also, Ghost House Pictures just hired Francis Galuppi, who made a movie called The Last Stop in Yuma County, which is not out yet. He is also writing and directing another Evil Dead movie. We got two more Evil Dead movies on the horizon from handpicked directors that Sam Raimi picked. Here's the thing. I like this new direction that the Evil Dead has gone. It was in Sam's hands through Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, even, I would say... Ash versus the Army of Darkness, the TV show, which is
Ash versus Evil Dead.
Freaking great. Yeah. Ash versus Evil Dead was a fantastic show. I love all that. That's all under Sam's hand. But since then, he has let other directors take it and kind of like, okay, now do what you want to do with it. And that's how we got the remake. That's how we got Evil Dead Rise. I just want more stories in the Deadite world. Like I like seeing other takes on it. The remake was one I avoided for years, but it's one of my favorite movies. It's so good.
With you on all that, except I'm a little worried that they have two movies in development that we might get to oversaturation.
No,
I'm like, give me one every 3 to 5 years. I'm okay, but don't.
I just don't we don't go have Star to wait Wars. We did between the Evil Dead remake and Rise was a decade. Like we don't need a decade between Evil Dead.
No, not a decade, I really don't want to become like Star Wars, where there's just like way too much.
Yeah, too quick, right? You don't have Disney behind it, though, that's going to have that kind of market saturation that you're going to get, I don't think.
And there's such a vast world to explore, because like, you can drop the Deadites in almost anywhere, and the Necronomicon.
It's like Evil Dead Rise was a pretty self-contained story. Like, it didn't really commit to the rest of it. I liked it, too.
Yeah, I liked it, but yeah.
Shocker, Jody and I liked a movie.
Yeah, I know, we're easy. I won't spoil what's coming up, but as we keep going through Creepshow, one of my favorite episodes is coming up pretty soon, and it's connected to this world, and it's so good.
I think you watch it before me, and you posted something like, I'm not going to spoil anything, but everyone needs to watch the episode. I watched it, and I was like, fuck yes.
All right. Sort of for our Patreon pit and dad advice, I decided to switch up a little bit and put out a call for questions and ask us anything.
Reality, Jason just couldn't think of anything depressing enough to ask our Patreons.
Yeah, pretty much.
We've been having too much fun lately.
Yeah. So we got a couple good responses. Our Patreon, Ashton, asked, how do you balance parenting, working, podcasting, and maintaining a fulfilling personal life? What advice would you give your younger self about the strive for balanced living, if that is something that you, in fact, strive for?
I'm not good at it. I strive for and rarely achieve.
Yeah, I think it's, you have to really just kind of pick your priorities. And granted, in Jody and Jason, you guys the same ways, our number one priorities are our families.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, absolutely. That's okay, because to pull back the curtain and get a little inside baseball, you guys have no idea how often we're like juggling around our, we'll say, all right, cool, recording on Monday and something will come up with one of us. And then we'll push it to Tuesday and something will come up. And that's just part of being a parent and part of having a family and just having other obligations besides this. But what I will say is it's all doable. I think the hardest thing we do as humans is we have this mentality we don't have time to do something when we really do. And I think it's okay to tell yourself, hey, I have time to do this, but I prefer to do this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the trick is never getting mad at yourself when you can't achieve something that you want to achieve or fit in time. Like, I love playing video games. That's like the back burner for what I do now, because I have so much other stuff that I love doing even more. And when I get to play video games, I have a great time. I'm happy. But I also know I'm not going to be upset if I don't get to get my 2 hours of Stardew Valley time a day. I have props to raise.
Well, also, like, you can find ways to integrate that stuff. Like, especially, like, that's why I love my Steam Deck so much. So I can sit with my kids while they're watching their show. Then I can have, like, an earbud in one ear and play a video game on my Steam Deck.
Also a Steam Deck guy. I like playing Stardew Valley on the couch, hang out with the family, watching a movie watch before, just shooting the shit. And I'm sitting here, you know, raising my crops and petting my cows.
Well, that sounds weird. But also, like, yeah, your family's your priority, but you can have other priorities like A, B, C, right, under that. And you can modulate a little bit on what you're doing at that moment, or kind of like, you know, budget your time as such. You know, we like Mom was saying, obviously our family's going to come first, but then we find time to do other things. Like, again, the podcast is a fulfilling activity that we all do. So, as far as what we tell our younger self is that, you know, it'll be okay. you'll get to it.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, there's personal projects I've been working on for like 9 months now going on. And I don't think telling myself, you know, just I have to do one thing at a time and, you know, I'll get to it. Don't freak out too much. You know, everything will happen in its time.
And I do have the luxury of having the oldest child on the show. And the only, it's only one child that I have on the show or that I have, I guess not on the show. It'd be weird if I had it on the show. So it does make life a little more simplistic when you do have an adult child who does their best to help out around the house, I guess.
Yeah.
But also you can find ways to integrate some of these things together too. Like, so I needed to watch this 45-minute episode of Creepshow for us to talk about it today. So last night, me and my daughter sat and watched it. And so she got to be a part of it. We got to have some cool like dad-daughter time and enjoy the show together. But also I was prepping for the podcast at the same time. So, you know, you can double dip a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. And like I do a lot of times too, where my wife loves horror movies. So depending on what we're watching, usually tonight I didn't only because of stuff happened, but usually I watch the episode with her. And that way we're kind of spending time together while I'm getting ready for this podcast.
Okay.
Okay, really quick. Can y'all hear me or am I
can hear you. I can't see you.
Okay, let me figure out what's going on with that. But we'll just keep going, even without my video, as long as I can still be heard. I can still hear you guys just fine.
I love that the logo that pops up when you lose video is like a butthole. Like, that's literally a butthole.
It should be, like, winking at you.
I think it's supposed to be spinning, but it's when it doesn't spin, that's all you got left. You just get the...
Okay, flipping over to Twitter, Maya Sharona 1987 says, what horror movies do you think should have been one and done with no sequels? For me, it's Jaws, and I don't have a good feeling about Ready or Not 2 either. So I was thinking about this a little bit, and as long as Radio Silence is behind Ready or Not 2, I'm in. If it's someone else, yeah, I'd be concerned. As far as movies that should have just been one and done, by far, The Exorcist.
Okay, I'm going to argue with that on that only because
Three is good, but it shouldn't have been the Exorcist sequel. Like, if they would have made it just Legion, like the book isn't meant to be in the Exorcist universe. The only way he could get the book made into a movie is if they plopped the Exorcist name on it.
I respect that.
So okay, if they would have made that its own thing, I think it would have been a better movie. But yeah, and pretty much anything else associated with Exorcist after the first movie has been not so good.
I have Jody's answer. Jody believes that Halloween 2018 should have been one and done.
It should have been. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, looking back on it, as much as I did actually enjoy Halloween Kills and there were some cool moments in it, it would have been just fine to not have Kills or Ends, either one. Like, that story could have stood on its own, and Michael dies in a fire in the basement, end of franchise, done. And that would have been fine. That would have been perfectly happy.
I will say
that they had to go and make a ton of money. So
yeah, but I will say that the fireman scene is
the fireman scene almost makes Kills worth the entire franchise of it. But still,
another one I was thinking of, and this might be a little controversial, is Tremors. I don't think any of the sequels are anywhere near as good as the first one, and also the effects just have never matched up to what's
good. I don't know. There's something to be enjoyed with these super low budget Tremors sequels. Like, I get why they're still making them.
Yeah, but I don't think they've ever been as good as the first one.
Oh, sure. The Ring. The Ring never needed a sequel.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
The Ring is a big one. Man, what sucks is a lot of my favorite films are part of franchises and part of a larger world, so it's really hard for me to kind of think, except for The Ring. I can't really, off the top of my head, think of anything else, because I was going to say Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I love 2 and 3.
2, yeah.
And I love definitely 3 as well. Leatherface with Viggo Mortensen, I think, is very, very underrated. And Ken Furry, I think, is very underrated.
What do you guys think of Jaws 2? I kind of like Jaws 2.
I didn't like Jaws 2. But it's also been 30 years probably since I've seen it. At least 20 years.
As far as it's obviously nowhere near as good as the first one, but there's something kind of popcorn fun about Jaws too.
Sure.
3 and 4, yeah, you definitely, those can go with the fire pits of hell.
Maybe Psycho? Like Psycho?
No, I love the Psycho sequels
are really good.
Yeah, Psycho 2 is really good, you're right.
2 and 3 both, I think, are really worthwhile.
They never should have made the remake.
Hmm?
The remake was pretty bad.
I kind of find the remake endearing and just like, that's cute.
I shouldn't say it was bad. It was just unnecessary.
Yes, completely unnecessary, but it's kind of, there's something kind of winkingly fun about it that I kind of enjoy. I'm looking at my
Deuce Bigelow. Deuce Bigelow did not need a sequel.
So many of my favorite horror movies are actually part twos in series, so it's really hard for me to say don't make sequels. Because I do, part two frequently is my favorite, because a lot of times it's where they figured out how to make it fun. So
I mean, Evil Dead 2 is a perfect example of that, to where
absolutely.
I love the original, but 2 is the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Here's a good one. It Chapter 1.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I understand they have to make it, but
yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to mention earlier when we were talking about like adapting Stephen King, is like, The adult chapter is always going to fail when they make a movie or a series or whatever. Not because the adults are bad. I like all the adult stuff. But the ending of the book is so weird and esoteric. And there's like a giant turtle and you're linking minds with this entity like by biting its tongue. Like, you're not going to do all that on film. So they end up just making giant spiders and it looks stupid every single time.
Pulling him to death. It's all
pulling, Pennywise to death. Like, it's you're not going to get what you get in the book. And so, yeah, it's hard to adapt from these things.
Wasn't it like 3 fucking hours long? I remember I saw Midsommar, the director's cut, the day before, and then saw that the night after. And I'm like, why is this movie so long? The adult cast in it, though, is fantastic. Bill Hader is wonderful.
I didn't love the guy they got for, what's his name, the main character. I love
totally fine with him.
Bill?
Yeah, I love, what's his name, James McAvoy, but I have trouble disassociating him with other roles. But other than that, it was fine. All right, we have an interesting one. I don't know exactly how to say this, so forgive me. John Svetes He's, quote, head honcho at Surge Media, host of the Basement Surge and Surge Cast, taking over the world one episode at a time. He asked, do you feel the surge? And my question is, if you're feeling the surge, you might want to go see a doctor.
Like, well, there was Surge Soda back when no, man, but shout out to you, John. Like, you're taking the world over. Just remember that we're cool guys. And and I'd like a prominent spot in this new world of yours, my friend.
The new world order.
I remember about 10 years ago, Surge Soda re-released for a little while.
Yes.
I ate that up while it was available because I loved it when I was a teenager, too.
Wasn't it just... I haven't had this as a teenager, so wasn't it just like Coke's version of Mountain Dew?
I mean, it was a Mountain Dewy type thing, except for it had more caffeine. Like, that was its whole thing.
Real fast, Jody, in Tennessee, I can't remember, do you get Mellow Yellow?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah. Mellow Yellow is better than Mountain Dew, and it was here... I'm with dude. Oh, Frank, you're from Tennessee, so you guys are Mountain Dew state.
Yeah, I like Mountain Dew. I like Code Red. That's probably my favorite of the Mountain Dews. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there, but
they make a Code Red Zero Sugar, and it's just impossible to find out here.
Yeah, I can't find that one either. But Mountain Dew, when I was in Mellow Yellow, when I was in college, had a melon flavor that was like not watermelon, but just like melon. I think I drank like six of those a day for the time period that it was out. Like, that was the best, and I haven't seen it ever since.
The only time I find Mellow Yellow nowadays are those cool ass like Coke machines that have all the a million different flavors.
Freestyle machines.
And I'm still apprehensive on those because you might still be drinking sugar based on what's come out before, but whatever.
All right. So we got another one from Rena Friedman Watts. On Twitter, she's the host of the Better Call Daddy show, which is my understanding it's a podcast people tell their stories and then she tells them to her father. Okay. It's my basic understanding, if I'm messing that up. Excuse me, but she asked, what was your relationship with your dad like? And we don't have time to go into all of that.
Go through five emotions in 5 seconds. Yeah.
I want to share a quick story from this weekend related to my father. My dad was a really big Abbott and Costello fan. He loved it. He was on First Skit. He used to perform it all the time. And when he passed away, we had a celebration of life service. And I asked two of his old friends to perform the sketch. And, everyone really liked it. It was a really sweet moment. Fast forward to this weekend, and I was at a family retreat, and they're doing a talent show. And one of the kids had a book, like a kid's book version of Who's On First. And they were thinking about doing it, but then they didn't want to. So I said, oh, I'll do it. So I went up to another guy that I'm friends with there. And we got up and performed the Who's On First, reading it from this kid's book. No rehearsal, nothing. And everyone got a big laugh out of that. So that's my father moment for the weekend. But I don't know if we have the time or the therapy credits to go too deep into it unless anybody else wants to share anything.
I'll share. My biological father, he passed away when I was 6 years old, but I don't have a bad memory of him at all. Like, every memory I have of him is positive. Like, he lived in El Paso, we lived in Virginia, and he came once a month to come visit me. And I have nothing but positive memories about him. My stepfather is not a good human being. He's a drug addict. He's an alcoholic. And we definitely never got along growing up. And we got in physical altercations before. So it was not good. But Rena, I love the idea of your podcast. I just added it to my downcast because I'm excited to hear it. Because I think it's a really cool concept. But the one thing I do want to say, though, is I learned a lot about how not to be a father from my stepdad.
Sure.
Like, I saw a lot of stuff he did to me and how he made me feel. And I'm like, I'm never going to let my child feel that way. And I think the only thing you can do, Willie, and I'm working. I mentioned on our ill-fated Lost podcast that I finally started seeing a therapist again after like 15 years. And it's been nothing but positive for me. And I'm trying to work through some of that. Like, I know I'm never going to have a relationship with my father or my stepdad, which is fine. But I want to make sure I had the best relationship possible with my child. Like, in the fact that she's 21 and still wants to hang out with dad, like, we're going to see Blue Easter Cult in Laughlin in September. Like, I'm so fucking stoked. Like, that's how I know I did okay.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to be my stepdad to my father, and I never will be.
Right. Yeah, Jody, anything you want to throw in there?
Yeah, no, I've always had a good relationship with my dad. You know, I just I mentioned in a previous podcast that I just recently bought him a couple joints for the first time since the 70s. So, you know, like we still hang out and do stuff together. I still love big family get-togethers when I get together with that side of the family, like with my brother and sister, mom and dad, that whole crew. Because it's one of those things where when we're sitting around the table eating a meal, we're all just throwing jokes back and forth so much that we're just cracking up, having a good time. So, yeah, no, I know how fortunate I am to have that, too, because I know a lot of people don't. And, you know, I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful that I do have that relationship, and I'm glad to be able to.
You know, there are times I'm really envious of people that have that relationship with their parents and they can go hang out and like, but I also understand that everyone's life is different sometimes and you got to take, and all I can do is be better for the next generation.
Yeah.
All right. We got one more question to finish us off for the night. Very serious. So let's put our, brace yourselves. This is from our good friend, Allison from the Who's There podcast.
Allison is the best. She just did her, Jody is back on video. Back. She just did her Bronx Zoo, I think it was, 5K a lot of people donated for a good charity. So, shout out to Allison, man. Allison's awesome.
All right. She is really challenging us with this one, so be prepared. She wants to know, who's your favorite Spice Girl?
Dude, I don't know a single Spice Girl's name. I'm very sorry. Wait, there's one called Scary, right?
There is one called Scary. Well, it's gotta be her. That's hard to pull, right?
If anything, I have an affinity for scary women, so...
Chucky season 3. Great. I'm really enjoying Chucky season 3.
Dude, I haven't seen the new episodes yet, but I definitely followed Jennifer Tilly's Instagram and I am excited to watch.
Jordy, do you have a favorite Spice Girl?
No, but I do remember when I was a teenager, we went to Gatlinburg. And Gatlinburg is one of these like tourist cities, like everything there is for tourists. And they do the or back in the late 90s, they would do like the face in the hole thing where you would like, you know, you'd all pose and then they would put your face like digitally on other people. And we did the Spice Girls with like my youth group and I was Scary Spice. So there you go.
When you said face in the hole, I thought you were talking about tossing salad. That's a whole nother conversation.
It's not a glory hole situation. I'm talking about early days before we had phones that you could get your picture made with a different, background and stuff.
All right. I can't resist a good redhead, so I'm always about the ginger spice.
Sure. Why not?
Why not? Thank you, Allison.
That's probably the most I've ever talked about the Spice Girls in my entire 41-year life. and no hate, man. It's just not my cup of tea. No. There's nothing there. Like, it's... I think it's cool that people have anything to latch on to. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode. We're not entirely sure what we're going to do next week, but I'm sure it's going to be a great time. So hopefully you'll join us. We appreciate everyone for listening. We'd appreciate if you'd give us a rating or review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And check us out on TikTok at
Mondo from the Crypt. God, I totally fucked that up. Dad's from the Crypt Talk.
Crypt Talk. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dad's from the Crypt.
Adios, guys.
Follow Dad's from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.